Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're very glad to have you listening this morning. We're also pleased to have back on the program once again the man we like to call our chef in residence here on Focus 580. His name is Doyle Moore, and for longer than anybody cares to think about, we've been doing the program with him on a regular basis, first Wednesday of the month, in the first hour, and he comes up with an idea. Sometimes it is a particular dish or approach to cooking. Sometimes it's a cooking from a particular place. And then we just say, well, let's have a good time and talk about that. No rules. You know, we talk about all kinds of stuff, but we talk about that and maybe tell stories and exchange recipes and always have a fine time. And certainly invite people to call in and contribute whatever they would like. So this time around, we're going to be doing that as usual. And we thought since Doyle had just recently come back from spending some time traveling in Italy, it seemed like a natural thing to do to say, well, okay, let's talk some about the foods of Italy. So if you have, if you've been to Italy and you have some story about some great meal that you've had, you could tell us about that. Maybe you have a recipe to share, and this could be something, it could be something truly Italian, it could be something Italian-American, that's okay. It could be a pasta thing, it could be, you know, this time of year we're all wanting to cook outside, some Mediterranean-inspired grilled item, could be an hors d'oeuvre, could be a set, it could be anything, anything at all. You can call in and tell us about it, and we always have a good time telling stories and exchanging recipes and talking about good meals we have had. So any and all of that, certainly welcome. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Welcome back.
Yes, thank you very much. I was gone for a while.
Yeah, we missed you. We actually... A couple of days after the regular time, we ended up doing a show where we were talking about cooking. We talked with a guy who has written a very new and really nice book on fish.
Oh, my.
Seafood cooking.
Oh, yes.
But it wasn't the first Wednesday, so your place in history is
still safe.
Is still safe. So where did you go?
Well, we were in Tuscany, and so outside of Florence, and so into Florence and, you know, back and forth. It was only about 9 miles away, and staying at an absolutely superb place. I couldn't have imagined a place that would have been I couldn't come up with the invention of a place that was as good as where we were. It was quite wonderful, just outside of Tuscany, and visited Siena and Pisa. And then, of course, you have to eat. So we managed to eat. What I think is rather funny, and I didn't really set out to do that, but I did not have one red-sauced pizza pasta meal. And I was very surprised. I kind of knew that was a possibility in Tuscany because northern Italian cooking is totally different from the Sicilian cooking, which is, you know, a tomato and everything, and I was rather surprised. I didn't have one tomato-y dish.
Mm.
So everything else is there, and it is very rustic is not the right word. It's very open and straightforward and done with a flourish and at the same time with great care. I did feel a difference in the attitude of people. We were right in the middle of olives and grapes.
Great wine there.
I'm telling you, Chianti, I wanted to find out what Chianti was all about. Well, it was all about me. It was everywhere. We were in the middle of fields where we were staying. There were fields that made great wines. And then the wines are on one side of the hill and the olive trees are in between and on the other side of the hill. So they both like exactly the same sort of situation, except one wants the sunshine and one doesn't necessarily have to have it. And it was right at the time when the olive trees were blooming. So It was pretty heady.
Yeah, I'm bad.
Wow. That was pretty wonderful.
So I think that says that now as people have learned more and more about various kinds of cooking, they have come to appreciate that there is something that maybe we grew up with that we would call Italian food, that when what that really is it's Italian-American food.
Oh,
and that's
fine.
Not that there's anything wrong with that. But that the food, the kind of things that people make in Italy, it's different. And it's different depending on where you go, because different regions, there's something that they produce right there that they use there.
And something that, you know, in the first place, there wasn't an Italy until the middle of the 19th century. That it just didn't exist as an Italy. And it's made up of regions. And those regions still hold their identity. They don't necessarily have the rivalry other than a kind of a happy-spirited rivalry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, where you we saw evidences of that. And I was very pleased that you go to an area and this is the way it is cooked. For example, just simple example, there is no salt in Tuscan bread.
Hmm.
And there were reasons given as to why there was no salt. Part of it, some of it is thought to be connected to the Pope who caused either taxes to change or something like that, or the government who was taxing, and they said, we're not going to do that. We'll just not put it in. That seems like an awfully curious situation, but the idea of eating a nice fresh loaf of bread and there's no salt in it, I loved it because I don't want the salt anyway.
Yeah.
And I was very surprised. The bread seems to be really the staff of life in Tuscany. And everywhere you go, there is someone making bread. And in the tiniest elementaries, where some groceries are, that isn't as big as this studio room, there's somebody in the back room there, and they're sitting and making bread. So it's all again very immediate and very right there and very, very regional. The regional part, it really pleased me very much because I knew that if I went somewhere, we had spent some time before, several years ago, in Umbria. And in Umbria, the cooking is totally different, and it should be. And it's not that far away. But I love the idea of regionalism because I'm kind of fond of people who have caused cooking and the way things are prepared to become an effort that is unique to them. I like that.
Yeah. We got a caller to talk with. Let's do that. Someone who is listening in Charleston on our toll-free line number 4, right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Hi.
And
hello.
Welcome back.
Yes, thank you.
My wife and I had the good fortune of working in northern Italy several years ago.
Yes.
And as we're traveling over, she turns to me on the plane and says, you know, I want to try Italian food, but I'm not going to eat spaghetti. I get spaghetti at home all the time.
Right.
I'm just going to try new stuff.
Yes.
Well, we're there about 2 weeks or so, and we're in a restaurant, and, well, she orders a spaghetti. How totally different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, and as you were just talking about, the freshness, the immediacy of it, it is fantastic. It's just so different from what we experience here as, you know, eating spaghetti, I don't go through the toil of making my own pasta, but oh my gosh, it's just, if you go to Italy, do try the spaghetti.
You're absolutely right, and it is really is more than just a surprise. It's really kind of a thrill.
Oh yeah,
because all of a sudden you say, but this is not what I expected. Why is it? You know, and then the same thing with the wines. Why is this wine so good and why can't I get any? The answer is because it's ours and we keep it here.
Yeah.
And I'm always sort of taken aback by that because I develop a love to taste taste and remember those tastes. And I'm thinking, well, do the best you can when you get home.
I think the same is true for the beer in Germany and the Guinness
yes.
in Ireland.
Yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. It isn't a mysterious thing that you have to be there or you can't understand it. It's not that mysterious. It's the fact that it is there and it is unique and you're all of a sudden enjoying it on a level that you've never expected.
Right. And I'll say the same thing about the pizza as well.
Yes.
In the wood-fired
yes.
brick ovens.
Yes.
Thin crust.
Yes.
And any topping you can think of.
and we have grown up with this idea in America that pizza didn't exist in Italy. I mean, it's you go there and you get a piece of cardboard with some mustard on it or something, and they call that pizza. And that we have made a different kind of pizza in America, and then the big stuffed ones, and then we've gone through lots and lots and lots of things, and it is very popular.
Yeah.
But the pizza that I got there was as good as I ever wanted to eat.
And if you come into a restaurant here and order a pizza, you're going to wait 20, 25 minutes.
Yes.
You order it there, it's to your table in five.
And it's fresh.
It's done.
And it's perfect. Good thin crust and lots of variety. Variety, which I was not prepared for. I remember in France the pizza wasn't particularly outstanding. And so I held that idea of, well, they just don't do it that way, you know. But, boy, I'm telling you, I had a lot of – and I always chose margarita because it's simple and plain and straightforward. And – but it seemed to be almost elaborate. It was so plain and straightforward. It was elaborate because the crust was cooked absolutely perfect, and the cheese. Oh, cheese! Don't get me started on cheese. I have tasted every kind of pecorino that there is, and I didn't even know there was one. You know, and it just went on and on and on.
Yeah.
So it was wonderful.
Let me leave you one last story. While we were there, my daughter was in a preschool.
Yeah.
In our little village. And after a month or so, she came home and complained about the lunch and what was wrong. And she says, every day it's pasta, every day pasta. And I said, but, you know, they put different sauces on it. That makes it different. Oh, I don't eat the sauce. So she was getting tired of just the butter and Parmesan cheese on her pasta.
Damn. Oh, how funny.
All right, I'll let you go.
Yes.
Thanks.
Well, thank you.
Well, this morning it's the first Wednesday of the month, and it has been for a long time our great pleasure to talk about food on this day. And the guest is the man we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore. He's been stopping by to do this for a long time. We pick some topic, and then we say, well, call in and tell us a story about your experience with a particular kind of food, or call in and give us a recipe, something that you have made that you particularly like and you'd like to share that with other people who are listening. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana. We do also have a toll-free line, and that's 800-222-9455. At any point here, you can give us a call. This conversation about pizza makes me think that really the thing that we maybe have lost sight of with the way that we approach pizza is that really, I think for the Italians, what pizza, it's a flatbread. And
yes.
It's not so much – it is sort of about the topics, yeah, but it's also about the bread part. And it's like the same deal with pasta, is that pasta is not – it's not so much about the sauce. It's also about the pasta and the sauce. They call it the condiment. It's supposed to be you get a little bit of that, but mostly it's supposed to be about the pasta,
the bread, yes,
about the bread. And in a way, it's sort of like the same thing. It's about the bread product as much or more than it is about whatever goes onto it.
And another kind of thought is that you. Every pizza that I ordered was an individual one. I mean, it wasn't something that I had to share with 20 more people at the table. And it was straightforward. Again, it was my little dish, and it was smaller. And oh yes, you're right. Taste was good.
So what was of those that you had? Well, you sort of said margarita.
Oh,
it was your favorite, which is basically just
cheese,
tomato
and cheese, and but then they would put tomatoes on it, and so, it would be, but there was no meat. I didn't, you know, I'm not eating any meat, so I had a lot of choices. Then there's one called with four cheeses. So here, take this one and have four different cheeses. That was always kind of a thrill. The whole eating experience is very carefully done. We had a facility where we were staying. The owners would have a big sit down dinner on Thursday night. You paid quite an amount to have it, but it was an 8-course meal, and so you went through all kinds of tastes and such things, and it was really an awful lot of food. But the part that I liked, and I had it in a couple of other places, was at the end of the meal, after you've done all of this heavy eating, you've even had the dessert and such, was there is a biscotti that is that's getting the wrong word used, and I'm all of a sudden I've forgotten the correct word. Cantuccini is a kind of biscotti, and a biscotti simply means a biscuit. But in all the recipes you get in America, just check out the biscotti recipe. Anyway, I fell in love with that because at the end of the meal you have this particular taste, and it is dipped in a very heady wine, Vinsanto.
Ah, see.
And I came home, and I wanted to have some Vinsanto, and it's $100 a bottle in champagne. Well, it takes 5 years to make it, and it's made with hand selected grapes that are dried by hand, and it take so okay, you can have that much. Well, I found a very nice Spanish wine that's made in the same manner. So I use that, and then I have the biscotti recipe, which I'm prepared to give today. So since we're talking about it, I will.
All right. Well, and we have another caller here.
Oh.
And this is somebody who's on cell phone.
Oh, okay.
So let's get to them. We'll not make them wait. They're on the road in Southern Illinois. Line 4. Hello.
Actually, Southern Indiana.
Oh, I'm sorry. That is actually what it says on my screen here. I misread. So yeah, go ahead.
I was calling because like the first caller, looking at exotic things to eat when you go.
Yes.
I was in Venice, and one of the dishes they offered was pasta cooked in squid ink.
Oh, yes. That's pretty rare.
That was I decided I had to try it and really enjoyed it. But what was strange was when it arrived, it was served in a completely black dish that had no glaze to it, so it was flat black. Then, of course, the pasta was completely black.
Yes.
So it was almost hard to even find the food within the dish visually.
That would be a surprise.
Yeah.
No.
Actually, very, very good, though.
It is a remarkable dish. The squid ink, I don't know how they harvest it, but the cooks know how to deal with that. And What kind of a sauce was with that?
Actually, it came with no sauce. Well, it came on the side. There was nothing on it. That was what was about it. It was, as I remember, a fish sauce, and the combination was really good to it. What turned out, because I was with a party of people, the most disconcerting part was more for my companions, because they said my teeth looked like they were full of holes because all these fragments of pasta. other than that, the dish was wonderful.
Well, that's a good treat. That's a very good treat.
It was. I don't think I've ever had a bad meal over there.
That's well, I can imagine that. I haven't traveled that far in Italy, but as I say, I do enjoy the identity of regional behavior. I like that.
The other dish that I really enjoy, which I think is pretty common, this was actually in a Jewish restaurant in Rome, and it was stuffed zucchini flour, breaded deep fried.
Oh, yes, yes.
That was really good, too. It was stuffed with the cheese.
Those are that's not rare. In fact, you could buy the zucchinis with the blossoms on them in the markets. And but that's a very passionate kind of dish here's this little flower at the end of the zucchini, and that's the thing that you pay attention to,
not
the zucchini. Oh, that was good. Good.
They're very good. And then one last comment, and I'll get off. The other thing I really enjoyed because of the fresh pasta was they actually had little shops where you could stand there watching them make the pasta and buy the right as it was basically coming out of the machine.
Oh, yes.
I always thought we need to have something like that here, a Starbucks version of a pasta shop, because it is so much better than the packaged thing to get to store.
Well, it is. And at one time, the Great Impasta used to be able to go in and get freshly made pasta here in town.
I wish there were more stores doing that.
Yeah, it is a treat. I do make pasta myself. I don't get too involved with it, but I have made some with red wine and some with cocoa. That was from my Umbria trip, because they were a little more adventurous with the pasta in Umbria.
And you said with cocoa?
Yes, with chocolate cocoa.
I'd like to try that one.
Well, that one is kind of it's dark brown, not dark brown. But it seems to be more rustic, and you want to hand cut the noodles for that. And but that was an Umbrian dish, yes.
Okay.
They're good.
I'll get off the phone.
Thanks a lot.
Well, thanks very much for calling. And we're already at the midpoint.
Oh, my word.
With Doyle Moore, the man we call our chef in residence once a month, first Wednesday. We talk about food. And this time around, since he was just in Italy, we said, well, okay, let's talk about Italian food. Give us a call if you have a recipe or a story, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. It's not hard at all to make pasta.
It just
takes some a little time and work, and you have to, unless you're going to roll it out by hand, you need to have either, you can have a little machine that you crank by hand, or there are if you have a good stand mixer, I think a lot of them have pasta making attachments that go onto them.
Yeah, some do.
Some do, but it's you can if you want to make it the hand crank machines, they're not very expensive.
No, they're only about $39,
and that'll do the thing. So that you first roll out your sheets, and then you have something that will then cut it into whatever. If you want to have spaghetti or fettuccine or whatever, then it will cut it into the required shape. And it's a very different. Fresh pasta is a really different thing.
It takes less time to cook it.
Yes,
I mean it's done in almost seconds rather than minutes, and it's a real great treat.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
And
that.
You can do as you say. You can, if you want to put things in it, you can do that. There's one that I got. It's a recipe from Marcella Hazan, who is the queen of Italian cooking. And it uses fresh rosemary and sage, which you chop up very fine, and then you mix that up with your dough, and then you roll out your pasta. And it's a great treat.
That would be, and you'd want a very light sauce on that, because you've got all that great flavor in there.
Just a light, usually what I do is a meat sauce that has a little bit of tomato. You can use veal if you feel okay about veal. Ground pork, it works real well. And a little bit of that sauce on that pasta, it's very good. It's a great thing. But it's sort of a winter thing. It was not something I probably would make this time of year.
Well?
At least I sort of think about it as it's kind of a winter thing.
Yeah, because there's a lot of boiling and heating, and that does work that way. I didn't eat very many pastas with red sauce on it, but good Alfredo sauces, mm-hmm. and then some just butter and Parmesan. No, not Parmesan. A little bit of Parmesan, a lot of Pecorino.
Pecorino.
I'm telling you, I didn't even know about Pecorino. I mean, I knew about Pecorino.
And is that a goat's milk?
Yes.
Cheese?
Uh-huh. And it's any and every kind of taste thought you can have, from fresh to very old to dried that you grate, and or one that's so soft it's just almost like cream cheese. They got it figured out. Okay. And I love that much.
Or is that a goat's milk or cheese, or is that a sheep cheese?
Oh, sheep. It's sheep. I'm sorry.
I think that's –
No,
I'm
sorry.
No, I think that's right. It is made – it's a sheep
cheese.
Yeah,
it's a sheep cheese.
Yeah, okay.
And a lot of eating of it.
All right. Well, folks, if you want to call in, recipe, story, 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. So I guess you said you would like to share
biscotti
recipe.
I want to give this biscotti recipe because this is a specific Tuscan biscotti. I have friends here in town who we sort of play around and make different kinds of biscottis, but I've given that all up. I'm right down to only the Tuscan biscotti, because that is one of the places where it really started, was, I think, just north of Florence, this particular recipe. And it has a lot of almonds in it. That's because I've made it with fruits and other kinds of nuts and such. But this is with almonds, and it's a little bit smaller than the general shape. But I'll give this to you quickly, and we'll have it available here. 3/4 cup of sugar, 2 cups of flour, 3 eggs, 1 1/2 teaspoons of baking powder, and 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, and 1 1/2 cups of whole unblanched almonds, and 2 teaspoons of vanilla. And it's pretty simple to make. You heat your oven to 350, and then mix the flour and the sugar and the baking powder and cinnamon, and then add the almonds so that they're already in the flour. And then in another bowl, whisk together the eggs and the vanilla. That's all there is. There's no milk or anything else. It's eggs and vanilla. And then mix that into the flour, and it's going to be very, very stiff. It's just going to be rigidly stiff, trying to pack it. So you really have to do it with your fingers. The mixing, you could start with a spoon, but soon you want to really get your fingers in. You don't knead it, but you kind of try to bring it all together, and you end up with sort of a big glob of very, very heavy dough, and then you form that into kind of a sausage shape that's probably 2 inches wide, and then as long as your pan needs to be, and you form it in this little round bit, and then you flatten it down just a tiny bit, and then you're going to have about 2 of those on the cooking pan, and you bake them for 25 minutes and stop, and you let them cool until you can handle them a bit, and then you take them out and cut them at a diagonal so you have a nice biscotti shape, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing else.
Yeah.
And then put them back in the oven, and here's where it gets dicey. Some cooks insist on them standing on their edges, and some insist on them lying flat. And I have done both ways, and I can't tell the difference. So but it goes back into the oven, which is lowered. You started at 350, you lower it to 300, and you put it in for another 15 minutes. And what that does is it really dries it out and makes it very, very dry. And then when you've sliced it, all those almonds are in it. Toast the almonds before you bake it. It that does add a little bit. Just put them in in a dish, or you could even do them over the top of a stove in a pan if you keep it moving. But to me, that little bit of toast is quite fine. And you got it to dip in your Vinsanto, and just in case you want to use coffee and tea, it works perfectly for that. And it's a necessity to dip. Therefore, the dipping becomes quite a little event.
Mm-hmm.
That is my excitement about it. Is that here is some, you know, for years, never dunk your donut. Remember, that was a real no-no, don't dunk donuts. Well, this one, you have to dunk.
You kind of have to dunk because they're, well, I guess I have eaten biscotti, but they're very hard.
Very, very hard. And this particular recipe makes it a very hard one. However, I keep them in a bag, and they kind of soften down a little bit, and you can nibble on one pretty much. It's not like eating a real hard biscuit, but that's a very simple recipe, and I was surprised it was that simple because the others that I've done, they're so involved. This one's easy, and it's very, very Tuscany.
All right. And if you would send us an email, send us a postcard, we can send you the recipe. We will also have it on our website.
Oh, yeah.
We have many recipes now from past shows are posted on the website. Just go to the Focus 580 section and look at links, and there will be the recipes from many of our past shows. Maybe let me mention one other thing here, and then I want to get on to a caller. Just mention real quick that maybe some folks saw the show that Doyle and I and a number of other people did together on WILL-TV. This would have been last December.
December the 3rd.
Live cooking show, C is for Crockpot. An unexpected smash success. We had a lot of fun. People who were involved in it had a good time. Apparently, people watching had a good time. So much so that we thought, well, let's do this again. We're going to do another program like that, another live cooking show, and this will be on Monday, September 8th. And the theme here is picnics, potlucks, and tailgates. So that gets you a sense of what kind of recipes we're looking for. We would be very happy to have recipes. And then what we'll do is, as we did before, we'll pick some, and then we'll ask the folks, would you like to come on to TV and show us the recipe, show us how you made it? So we are accepting recipes, and we will almost through the end of the month, through July 21st. So please, if you have a recipe, go ahead and send it to us. You can send it by email, by conventional mail. You can send it through our website, any way you want to do it. We'd be really happy to have the recipe. Some of them we'll do on the show. We'll put together everything that we get, we'll put together in another cookbook that we'll make available. And I'm sure that once again, we will have a good time. So mark your calendars, ladies and gentlemen, for Monday, September 8th. We're going to do it again.
Yay.
All right. And let's talk now with a caller in Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
My background's Sicilian, and food's always a center of conversation and sharing, and especially around Christmas, we do the whole ethnic thing. We go really wild with it.
Oh, yes.
And there are several things that we have, appetizers and main meal, that I wanted to talk about, kind of share with you and with the callers, and also kind of some questions about it as well. One of the hors d'oeuvres that we have is an olive salad. In Sicilian, it's called olivi scacciati, but it's smashed olives. And
yes.
Either, you know, my grandmother, who didn't have very good teeth, she would actually cut all the olives out. But my mom would just take the olives and smash them with a pan or something. And olive oil and garlic and celery, and just kind of mix it together. And just eat it as a salad, and it was wonderful. And she had another thing that we would only serve at Christmas, but apparently it's really more of a Lenten dish, because when you couldn't eat meat, it was with wheat berries and chickpeas.
Oh, yes. Wheat berries, yeah.
And would boil the wheat berries, I guess, I don't know, 45 minutes to it. My mom always did it right. My daughters have always complained that I didn't get it as good as grandma. But it was I guess you have to boil them for like 45 minutes.
Well, now that depends. If you get wheat berries, that's one. But but you're describing farro. With the Italians use farro, which is an ancient kind of wheat that cooks more quickly than the triticum vulgate that we have here.
Ah, okay.
And so there, so you're right about the material, but if in Italy they would use farro.
Okay, but she would cook it up and then she would add chickpeas.
Oh yes,
lots of olive oil and garlic. Oh, lots of garlic. And in fact, she made some recently, so I just brought some home, and I have it defrosting in the refrigerator. I'm probably going to have it for lunch today.
Oh, that sounds neat. Yeah.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to it. And she would also make squid salad. And in Sicilian, in Italian restaurants, I always hear it referred to as calamari, but my family always call it calamari. So I don't know if that's a dialect thing.
I think it is, yes.
But she would, she'd boil the squid and olive oil and lots of garlic again. And the funny thing was, we'd always tease her because early on she tended to overcook the squid because I think her mother did it that way. And I used to think, eating squid chewy. And when she finally got it right in other restaurants, so we always kind of teaser about. Yeah.
Well, squid is a difficult one to cook because if you overcook it, it gets rubbery.
Yes.
And you can do that very easy, no matter what technique you're using, whether it's boiling or roasting or grilling, you have to be careful and not overcook it.
Oh. Well, the main course is homemade raviolis.
Mm.
And we roll out the dough. In fact, we used to do it the day of, but lately we'll do it 2 or 3 weeks beforehand and freeze them.
Oh, yes.
And they turned out really well.
That's handy, isn't it?
It's wonderful.
Yeah, to be able to do that. That's very handy.
But we roll it out. You could practically see through the dough.
Oh, my, yes.
And we've got a production line going where we have one person rolling and another person with the cheese. And my mom's kind of a purist. She doesn't like to do a lot of extra stuff. It's just basically ricotta, which again, more of the dialect, rigotte.
Yes.
Ricotta cheese and grated hard Parmigiano Reggiano cheese,
mm-hmm.
and eggs and salt. Very simple. And she just mixes that together, and that's the only filling. She doesn't do any meat, doesn't do any other vegetables to it. And we sit there and we crimp it with the fork and we dust it and put it on the sheet and dry it out and we make a couple hundred. And then what we did, my grandmother would roll over in the grave if she heard this, but we have, the leftover dough and we do re-rolls. And my grandmother was a purist. She would never use the leftover dough.
Oh, yeah.
But we do that, and that's the treat for the ravioli makers. So we'll make that the same day. It's kind of a special treat. But it's something I always look forward to because that's usually around the first or second week of December, and we make those up. But the wheat berry thing is something that I want to do more often. You were saying farro? Is that?
Well, I just learned that in Italy, yeah, F-A-R-R-O is the kind of wheat berry. It is a kind of wheat. There is also spelt. Spelt is a European ancient wheat, and farro is an ancient wheat. Then we've perfected it and made
other
things.
Do you know any places locally that have that?
I haven't found it. I haven't been back long.
I've just gotten the sweet berry stuff that I think I've gotten at International Harvest.
Yes.
And that I've had to cook longer.
Well, yes, you will. And that's really what I'm saying because careful, as I was reading in Italy, that you get a carefully prepared farro, and it only takes 45 minutes to cook it. And wheat berry, like you get in southwest Kansas where I come from, takes about an hour and a half to cook.
Okay.
And so that's the only major difference. And then one of them is don't soak the wheat, and another one is do soak the wheat. So you have an argument as to But if you're using just regular wheat berries, American-style wheat berries, I think you want to soak it overnight.
Okay.
And that helps with the cooking. But the farro was able to cook it in 45 minutes. So
have you traveled in Sicily or had any?
No, I haven't. I've only been in Umbria and Tuscany.
Okay.
So I'm sort of middle and north.
Okay. Well, one of my post-retirement trips that I want to plan is to hit the old homeland and try things out. One side of the family is from near Palermo, and another side is from near Enna. And I'm just wondering if there would be major regional variations even on an island like that.
There can be. I think they're a little more together than that, though, because you're not going into another major area. Because I forget how many. I can't even name what those divisions of the country were, but
okay.
I would have an idea that one's all the same.
Well, it's been fun talking about my.
Yes, you. Well, but you see, you've done something which I like very much is that you point out that it becomes a not a community, but the family is involved in all of these efforts, and you kind of look forward to it, and so it's treated with a kind of celebration and respect. I like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yes,
all right, thank
indeed.
You for the call. I'm here noodling around as you were talking on
noodling.
The web. Noodling around. Thank you very much. And because I'm just trying to see, can you get could you get farro? Now I have found a place here where they have spelt.
Yeah.
Flour.
Yeah.
So, and
that's
I'm thinking
flour,
that,
yeah.
that probably these things are, you know, now there's more interest in these wide range of things and organic product and products, things that people ate, you know, different places in the
yes.
past that we've sort of abandoned getting back to. I expect that probably if people really were interested that, you know, and you got internet access, you could find some place where you could get farro.
Well, I am too, because even the information I got in Italy said that it is available in America. And but that's exactly the way you have to do it. You're going to have to find somebody who does that. But that's another kind of wheat berry. Spelt is another early form, and in fact, they confuse spelt and farro in Italy and call them both the same. So it's awkward.
Mm.
But they are two different, and they're two different grains.
Okay. Well, other questions? We've got a story to share. We've got a recipe. We've got about 5 minutes here this morning with the man we'd like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, who stops by the first Wednesday of the month. We talk about cooking, and this time around, because he just recently spent some time in Italy, we thought, well, okay, let's talk about Italian food. Give us a call, 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. And I think we have somebody else ready to go here, line number one. Hello?
Hi, yeah. You can buy farro in Spain at places like World Harvest or Art Mart.
Oh.
Okay. So good. You can.
Oh, I didn't.
You can.
Good.
And I wanted to give you a really simple recipe that I like for homemade ravioli, and that is just butter and sage sauce.
Oh, butter and sage, yes.
Fresh sage leaves, or even in the winter, the dried up ones. Just heat butter up and cook them till they're crispy, and we fight over the sage leaves. But it's wonderful simple topping for ravioli.
I had fried sage leaves in Italy. They were kind of a garnish. We didn't use them as a sauce. But I see how that would really be good. And
well,
I was quite.
You're fragrancing the butter.
Yes, yes. You're giving it and in Italy the sage leaves were huge. Yeah, bigger than I've ever seen anywhere, and I've grown sage, and the leaves are sort of medium size, but I was rather thrilled with these sage leaves that were cooked. So I'll remember that. Yeah, it's just sage leaves and butter, and they kind of frizzle up a little bit, and it would make a good sauce.
Brilliant.
That's good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Buon appetito.
Thank you.
333-9455. Toll-free 800-222-9455. We have maybe about 5 minutes in this part of the show. Was there another?
I have another recipe?
Yeah.
And I'm going to give it as it'll be quick, but it's from the heart. I this was one of the dishes that – well, both of these dishes were served to us by the people who had done – but this is something that I'm getting very excited about. It's crispelli, and crispelli is the Italian form of crepes. But the difference is the crispelli is a little bit thicker and a little bit heavier and isn't as thin as a French crepe. And I've looked at the difference, and the difference is there's a little more flour used in the crispelli. So anyway, that's enough of that. The crispelli, 1.5 cups of flour, and I use a cup of whole wheat and 1/2 cup of all-purpose, 4 eggs, 1/2 teaspoon of salt, and 2 cups of milk. That's all that makes – is all that you have to use. And you mix that all together and they recommend breaking the eggs over the flour and then mixing that and then add the milk later. But that can also be done in a blender. And you just go ahead and make it cook it. But it's the filling that was so good. I use 1 cup of ricotta, 1/2 package of Neufchâtel cream cheese, and 1/2 pound of grated fresh mozzarella, and then about 1 pound of sliced mushrooms. And if you can get the wild mushrooms, that's wonderful. We had boletus, and you can't get those right now. But I would use the wild mushroom mix or the sliced cremini, and then some grated nutmeg, and then heavy whipping cream. Well, so you get all that sauce going, and you lay them inside. The round crepe and simply fold it over. It's not rolled. Fold it over. Then you lay them like tiles. Smear a little bit on top. Pecorino on top of that and 15 minutes in a 450 oven and you got it.
Right.
It's pretty straightforward. This is all written up. So if you call in for that, that's the crispelli recipe.
All right. Well, also, and it'll also be on the – we'll put it on the website.
Yeah.
Or if you don't have internet access or you don't want to do it that way, call us, send us – drop us a line and we'll send you a copy.
Sure.
Let's see if we can get at least one more person.
That's why I was talking so fast.
Urbana, line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Just a quick question. I wondered if Doyle tried to bring – any herbs or ingredients back. I didn't know about custom rules on that, and I'll hang up and listen.
The answer is no, I didn't. I fell in love with a green kind of a cabbage, and I got the seeds, but you can't bring seeds back either, so I couldn't do that. And I chose not to bring back a lot of stuff. Oh, olive oil. Oh, olive oil, the best in the world. I mean the best in the world. I did bring olive oil back, but that was they're very, very tight about things like that, especially meats and things that are not in cans. And you can bring things that are in cans and sealed in bottles, but you can't bring anything else. So I didn't.
All right. Well, I hope that answers the question. Yeah, it's difficult. You can, you know, maybe things like that. You can mail order. Essentially, you can order out of catalogs. You can do stuff
sometimes.
Like that,
you
sometimes.
Can,
but yeah.
For example, the prosciutto that you get there is so totally different from what we get here, and they will not ship it to America.
Yeah.
There is a prosciutto made in Canada, but that everyone goes, "Oh, poo, that's not real."
Well, it's like you said, they're keeping all the best stuff for
themselves. The answer is go, yes.
Yeah. All right, line two. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to let you know that spelt berries are available at the Common Ground Food Co-op.
Oh.
Which is, I just called an ask.
Yes.
They're at Springfield and right in the Illinois Disciples Foundation until maybe the end of the month. And then August 15th, they're going to be opening A new store,
yes.
To the public.
Lincoln Square.
It's going to be open 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Right now it's open noon to 8 p.m. And you can shop there now 3 times without being a member. And after the new store opens, anyone will be able to shop there.
That's good. Thank you. Well, then Faro is available here.
No, Spelt.
Oh, Spelt.
Spelt.
Oh,
Spelt berries.
Well, both. Well, the earlier caller said though, Faro, too. You
right.
can get that at, she said you get it at the Art Mart. And I would also wonder what, you know, if they, what sort of things they might have like that at Strawberry Fields, because they do have bulk grains.
Yeah, they have.
And
I haven't
so
checked
forth.
That. I haven't checked those out yet. I haven't been back long enough.
Okay. Well, and people should definitely, I know a lot of folks are looking forward to the opening of the new location for the Common Ground Food Co-op, which I believe is going to be in Lincoln Square. It's going to be there. And it's going to be sort of more open to anybody who would like to shop there. So, you know, go in and check them out later this month. We're just about the point where we're going to have to finish. I don't know if there's anything in
particular. The old clock on the wall.
The clock on the wall says that it's time we got to go. I was thinking about you earlier this summer when in some of our past conversations about flour, when I read this story about, you know, people in the South, they're all up in arms because White Lily is going to close their mill in Knoxville and move production of the flour to the Midwest. And people there are all bent out of shape about it. They've been milling it in Knoxville since 1883, something like that. And they're
closing the mill. Well, at least they have the recipe right. They'll probably get the same kind of flour.
Well, they're doing that, but apparently also people, you know, hardcore Southern cooks are saying, oh, I can tell the difference. You make a biscuit with the White Lily from the Knoxville mill and from another mill, and they can tell you which is which.
I see.
So ingredients, this tells you that ingredients are very important and that people are really passionate about what it is they use to make things.
Well, you do learn the ergonomics of working with a certain kind of way in a certain form,
yeah.
And you don't want to spoil that. Well, I'm sorry about that.
Well, in any case, we're going to have to finish up here. If you'd like to have the recipes that Doyle mentioned, either you can drop us a line or give us a little time here. Eventually, they will be on our website, and there are also many recipes from past shows that we've done when Doyle's been here on the website, so you can get them that way very easily if you have internet access. Otherwise, we can get them to you if you tell us which you want, and we'll do this all again next time. And do, again, remember, we're doing a show, another live cooking show on WILL-TV in early September. And if you have a recipe, this is potlucks, tailgates, picnics, that kind of recipe, send it to us. And we'll, at the very least, we'll put it in the cookbook. And we might invite you to be on television with us. If you're brave enough to be on TV with me and the Doyle man here, to do it. Thanks very much.